Thank you very much, Wendy. I think that a lot of you know that I sing opera, and I'm not sure what is more terrifying right now, the thought of singing an aria or actually doing this presentation. But it is a pleasure to speak to you again this year and provide an update on IROC's ongoing work in analytics. I hope that what I present today will provide some insights into a number of the debates going on in the Canadian marketplace. And I would like to say at the top that I'm happy to answer questions at the end of the presentation, so if you can wait until then, I would appreciate that. So as part of IROC's current strategic plan, we committed to the use of data, research, and organizational knowledge to deliver effective and expert regulation. That commitment recognizes the need for IROC as regulators to keep up with the rapidly changing environment that is the Canadian equity markets. As Susan Wojcena indicated earlier this morning, this is why we have been building our capacity to do our own research and to enable others to do research. We refer to this internally and aspirationally as the development of a center of excellence at IROC. There are three critical components that are necessary to reach this goal. The first component is technology. On April the 1st of this year, we launched a new data repository called the Equity Data Warehouse, or EDW, which allows us to quickly retrieve large data sets for analysis and enhance our ability to do proactive and reactive analysis in a timely and efficient manner. This is the first step to building an analytics toolkit. The second component is people and expertise, and I'm very pleased to announce today that Beju Devani has joined the team in analytics as director. Beju joins us with a very strong background in computer engineering, research, and business, and has extensive experience developing analytic platforms from the ground up and utilizing predictive analytic techniques such as machine learning. Our intent is to further build the knowledge pool through the addition of quant expertise and the leveraging of in-house expertise. The final component to the Center of Excellence is partnerships. Again, as Susan discussed this morning, we have been working hard to establish a framework to enable collaboration with academics for the third phase of our HFT study. We hope that this will lay the foundation for ongoing collaborations with academics and other stakeholders in the industry. So with that background, I'm happy to provide you with some preliminary results of our studies of HFT and the impact of the new rules around trading in the dark. The focus of these insights today will be on three discussions that are taking place in the Canadian market. The first is around the intermediation by HFT. The second will look at the impact of the repeal of the tick test in October of last year, and the third will offer some preliminary insights into the impact of the new rules around trading in the dark. To provide some context, IROC has been refining our approach to identifying HFT. As you all know, in December of last year, we published the results of phases 1 and 2 of our study, so-called HOT study. But we recognize that study relied on a methodology using a high order-to-trade ratio as a sole measure. And we recognize that was a very broad definition. Since the publication of the study, we have been exploring other approaches to identifying HFT activity. So today's results rely on what we call an advanced segmentation methodology, or ASM, which allows for a narrow definition encompassing more factors. Several steps take place in this. The first is we filtered out all of the user IDs that had minimal orders and trades. We then took the remaining universe of user IDs and applied three measures. We used high order-to-trade ratio again as one of those measures, but added in a fast order amendment speed and a measure of number of orders entered. I stress again that this approach is based on our study of the activity in the marketplace. So we recognize that we will capture any type of market participant using HFT-like strategies, be they proprietary HFT firms or dealers and clients using strategies that are HFT-like. We are continuing to investigate ways to refine the identification of HFT. So what is the impact of that new methodology? In the original HOT study, which covered the period August 2011 through October 2011, we identified 182 user IDs as part of our HOT group. Using the new ASM methodology in the period January 2012 through June 2013, we have identified 60 user IDs that we would classify as HFT. 56 of the user IDs are common to both the HOT and the ASM methodology. The result of this is that 128 of the HOT user IDs are now excluded from our HFT group. So what do these metrics look like? So very, very complicated chart. So this chart compares both the HOT and HFT groups trading in TSX and TSX Venture listed securities for the period January 2012 through June 2013. So we've created here an apples-to-apples comparison. I would note that we have not included CNSX listed securities, as our analysis shows extremely small amounts of HFT activity in that marketplace. I would also note that in the HOT study, we reported that HOT represented 22% of volume, 32% of value, 42% of trades in all trading for the period of the study, which was August through October 2011. For the more recent period of January 2012 through June 2013, HOT activity has declined. We're now seeing 16% of volume, 24% of value, and 34% of trades. Far more interesting is when we compare the HOT to HFT. Most of our metrics show slightly less HFT activity when compared to the HOT, with a few exceptions. In general, we did not see a reduction in the percentage of trades executed. However, we do see a slight increase in the trading of TSX-listed securities. We did see a more dramatic decrease in the percentage of order activity. We believe it partially results from a change in our methodology. When we applied the HOT methodology, we included pegged orders, which can inflate order numbers. When we applied the ASM methodology, we excluded the pegged orders from our calculations. This also accounts for a smaller order-to-trade ratio in the HFT group. So I offer a profound apology to all those traders who thought they were HOT, but IROC is leaving it behind. So going forward for the rest of the presentation, we will be relying on our HFT definition in all of the analysis. I would also note that with one exception, all of the analysis today is based on an 18-month period encompassing January 2012 through June 2013. So first up is a look at how often HFT trades actively, that is, takes liquidity, and passively, or provides liquidity. And really, there's no surprise here. This supports other research. HFT trade passively more than actively. I would note that the percentages do not add up to 100%, as our analysis included certain types of executions that do not differentiate between active and passive, such as opening trades, intentional crosses, and other match trades. There has been, however, debate around maker-taker structures, fee structures, and the impact on HFT behavior. It is interesting, therefore, to look at the active-passive rates of HFT on four marketplaces with differing fee structures. In particular, Omega and CX2 both offer inverted fee models. That is, in the case of Omega, they do not charge for taking liquidity, or in the case of CX2, they offer a rebate for taking liquidity. Both markets actually charge for posting passively. And yet, HFT's active-passive rates do not change. If anything, the passive rates are higher. Is it possible that the maker-taker is not a major driver of HFT behavior, as it's often discussed? I recognize not enough data to answer that today, but I think it is certainly food for thought. One of the factors we can look at for the discussion on the impact of HFT is how often they execute stabilizing trades versus destabilizing trades. I would caution that our approach to measuring this is based on a historical definition of stabilizing and destabilizing trades. In other words, stabilizing trade equals a buy on a downtick or zero minus tick, or a sell on an uptick or zero plus tick. Destabilizing trades would be the opposite. For example, a sell on a downtick is considered a destabilizing trade. It'll also be important for us to look at the market's reaction to these trades. But based on what we have before us today, a higher percentage of HFT volume executes as stabilizing trades, and a large percentage of these trades are executed passively. This is true for trading in both TSX-listed and TSX-venture-listed securities. So if it is true, as the data shows us, that HFT executes more stabilizing than destabilizing, what does this say about their impact on volatility? Again, more research is needed, but it is food for thought. I'd like to move on now to some insights into the short selling debate. These insights are focused more on HFT and shorting, and several concerns were raised around the time that we repealed the tick test. The first was that the repeal of the tick test would have a detrimental impact on the markets. The second was that the repeal of the tick test and the introduction of the SME marker, which exempts users from declaring themselves or having to declare themselves short, would lead to rampant short selling by HFT. And tied into that is the notion that the SME marker equals HFT. So let's deal with the last issue first. Our analysis show that not all users utilizing the SME marker exhibit HFT behaviors as defined in our methodology. I note in this case that the period of analysis was April through June of 2013. The SME marker was introduced in October of 2012. IROC allowed a grace period for implementation, so usage stabilized at the end of March. So to get a very clear picture, we only relied on 3 months for this. I would also offer a reminder that the SME marker is a regulatory marker applied to all trades, both buys and sells, for an account that employs strategies which normally would result in the account being flat at the end of the day, that is, directionally neutral. The first slides focus on trading in TSX-listed securities. This chart represents the percentage of volume of all selling activity, whether from a short or long position, executed on a downtick compared to the actual volume executed in TSX-listed securities during the period. Selling on a downtick, as shown in the chart, remains constant regardless of changes in volume flow. I would also note that there is no change as a result of the repeal of the tick test, which is indicated by the black line on the chart. This slide focuses in a little bit more on HFT activity. Specifically, it measures the percentage of their activity which is executed on a downtick during the period, again, whether from a long or a short position. Again, we see that for most of the period it was relatively stable, particularly following the repeal of the tick test, but we have seen a recent increase in activity. And again, a further slide to show even a little more dissection of HFT selling activity, focused a little more on short selling. The use of the SME marker exempted those participants using it from having to declare themselves short. Concern, as I indicated earlier, was that this would result in rampant short selling on a downtick. The chart demonstrates that even with the introduction of the SME marker, the portion of HFT participants who use it are still not executing a large percentage of their activity on a downtick. The next three slides present similar information for trading in TSX venture-listed securities. At IROC, we were well aware of the concerns around the state of the TSX venture market and specifically concerns about the impact of the repeal of the tick test in that marketplace. We hope that these charts can provide some insights. This chart indicates that the percentage of sell volume executed on a downtick, again I stress this is from a long or a short position, has remained constant regardless of the state of the market. When we focus in on HFT activity, we can see that the percentage of selling executed on a downtick by HFT, again regardless of whether from a short position or a long position, slightly decreased after the repeal of the tick test. And as with trading in TSX-listed securities, this chart demonstrates that even with the introduction of the SME marker, that portion of HFT participants executing on a downtick has not dramatically changed. This slide provides a brief introduction to the highlights of the new rules around dark trading in the dark, which were implemented on October 15th, 2012. I know that all of you are very knowledgeable about this rule. During the comment period, IIROC committed to studying the impact of the change of the rules. We are in the early stages of this study, but we're happy to present some preliminary insights. Again, a number of these insights are focused on HFT. As everybody knows, both markets showed a decline in the volume of dark trading after the implementation of the new dark rules. Our analysis shows that dark trading in TSX-listed securities showed the steepest decline after October 15th. Prior to that date, 8.6% of trading in TSX-listed securities was executed in the dark. After October 15th, that number dropped to 4.7%. The percentage of dark trading in the TSX venture-listed securities is comparatively small, but also declined after October the 15th. So prior to that date, 1.8% of activity in TSX venture-listed securities was executed in the dark, and after that date, 0.8% of activity in TSX venture was in the dark. I would mention that dark trading is on the rise. By the end of June, as can be seen from this chart, it has risen back to 5.1%, and we have seen further increases since that time. When we look at HFT trading TSX-listed securities in the dark, we notice that prior to the rule implementation, HFT was on average trading 26.6% of all dark trading. Post-rule HFT, post the implementation of the rule, HFT on average represented 19% of all dark trading. Interestingly, the pre-period appears stable. The post-period shows a downward trend. This chart allows us to see which marketplaces HFT were executing their dark activity in TSX-listed securities by market share. What's interesting is while initially they were most active on TriAct, which is represented by the purple line, the landscape shifted in the spring of 2012 as they became more active on Alpha, which is represented by the blue line. Question is, what is it about Alpha Dark that appealed to the HFT, and why this move? With the implementation of the rule, it appears that HFT pulled out of Alpha, and there is an increase in trading in Chi-X Dark. The next two slides show trading in TSX venture-listed securities from the same perspective. In the pre-rule amendment, HFT was 21.7% of all dark trading. Post the rule amendment, HFT dropped to an average of 6.9% of dark trading, so a much more dramatic decrease than in TSX-listed securities. The post-period also shows a downward trend. So the question is, in TSX venture-listed securities, where are they trading? And we see a similar landscape to their trading in TSX-listed securities. There has been a gradual decrease, again, in activity on TriAct, matched by an increase in activity on Alpha prior to the rule implementation. Dramatic decline in their activity in Alpha and an increased activity on Chi-X after the rule implementation. So thank you very much for this opportunity to present some of our initial findings. I am happy to take questions before I hand the podium over to Wendy Rudd.
Hi, Victoria. Kuno Tucker, ITG. Just wanted to know, was there a segmented look at when there were times when volatility was extremely high and what the effect of HFT or the activity of HFT was in those periods?
That is on our agenda to look at. Absolutely.
Thanks.
No more questions? Oh.
These commentaries that you provided, will that be included?
Sorry, Fionnuala Martin. The commentary that you've just given to go
yes.
with these slides, will that be included in the publication of this information when that happens to help us interpret what the slides say?
I think at this point our plan is to put the presentation alone up on the website. At some point in the future we will publish a more comprehensive document that will encompass some of the commentary from today.
Hi, Victoria. Dave.
Hey,
Dave. I'm wondering if you're planning to take a look at the impact on price improvement that's available to resale investors as part of the dark liquidity rule change.
Absolutely. These are all things we want to look at. We're working on it.
It's Andy O'Hara, TradeBot. In addition to price improvement, I'd also be interested in measuring the impact of growth in the select and CXU market share and the net economics of a trade that it goes along with those.
Absolutely. Any other questions, comments? No aria today, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. I'm around if you want to ask questions.